Welcome to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with Mark Haney. Mark is a serial investorpreneur and the chief dreaming officer of the Haney Biz family of companies. With an endless supply of energy, he deploys his experience and passion to unleash the potential in others and share the stories of the region's most influential leaders. And now, here's Mark Haney.
All right, all right, all right. This is the Haney Biz Project, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in our hometown of Sacramento, one entrepreneur at a time, one conversation at a time. And that conversation begins with one simple question. Are you hanging or are you banging? And that, my friends, is the big answer, because if we're hanging, that's cool. It's Saturday morning. It's a great time to be relaxing. But if you are banging, that means you are winning. You are at your very best, at your very best opportunity. And I mean, so many times in our lives, we wake up and it's like, you know what? I wasn't really at my very best this last little while. And you know what? Why aren't we at our best so often? And I'm not at my best a lot. And you know what? I've at 54 years old, just had a birthday. I've kind of discovered that the times when I'm not at my best, it's when I'm not doing what I love. It's also when I'm not allocating my resources correctly, when I'm not committing my resources to the right things. These are big decisions for entrepreneurs. These are big life decisions. Is how am I going to spend my time? How am I going to spend my resources? Because they're so precious. But the third thing that I think causes me to maybe not be banging at my very best is when I lose sight of my true purpose, when I forget what it's really all about. And today I am here with a man who has a huge purpose. And, you know, he's also a man who never gives up. I'm here with Titan Gilroy. How you doing, Titan?
I'm doing good, Mark. How are you?
I appreciate you coming on the show today. And our second guest is going to be Ted Gaines. But you have jumped in the chair to share the story of Titan America and Titan Gilroy. Now, let me just ask you one question. Now, when you are banging, when you are winning, Titan, what does that mean in the world of Titan Gilroy?
I think it's that boldness to step out and do what everybody says is impossible, right? Let all those words slide off you and just walk forward boldly to make it happen. And then after it happens, you look back and you're like, you know what? That was awesome.
That is cool. That was awesome. Yeah. And okay, so let's talk about what that is at Titan America. You've built this empire, basically. It's still growing, but talk to us about what your business is.
Yeah, so we have a manufacturing company. We're building products right here in America, not only in America, but in the Sacramento Valley.
Nice.
A lot of rocket parts for Elon Musk, SpaceX, Blue Origin, different aerospace companies. And back in 08, just like everybody, I went through the valleys and actually almost lost my company. And I came out of that just motivated and energized to make a difference so other people didn't have to. So I started a TV show to pull back the curtains and show people what manufacturing was about, talk about processes, and basically unveil this amazing industry that built the American economy. And now it plays on Monday nights, every Monday night at 9 p.m., Making American Parts, right on national TV, teaching the next generation.
And this is amazing because this is happening right here in Rockland, in California, a state where some might say manufacturing is dead, but you're doing it right here. And now I just got to ask you, making rocket parts for Elon Musk, I mean, how did that happen?
Ooh. You know, I was making parts for a local company, Schilling Robotics, and they was building ROVs, remote operated vehicles with titanium arms that drop to the bottom of the ocean and actually move around pipeline, weld and everything. And when that industry came to a halt when the whole war on oil back in 08. And right there, I had a lot of experience in building titanium parts. Elon set out to actually build his F-9 rocket and colonize Mars. And I thought, you know, this is a crazy, you know, this is a crazy goal right here. Let's get behind him. And I've been making parts for the last 10 years for Elon.
But you figured out a way, obviously, in a rocket ship, the parts, the air factor has to be virtually zero. You figured out a way to do that without really having to use your hands. When you walk into Titan America in Rockland, describe what that looks like, because it's those machines and the computers that actually drive that perfection.
Yeah, absolutely. So back in the day, we had mills and lathes, and they were hand cranks, and you cranked them with your hands, and you cut metal, cut aluminum and steel and titanium. And today, they basically have a computer on them, so it's all computerized. It runs in record time, and then it takes skill, like mental skill, to understand how to program that machine, right? But you got to have a vast knowledge of tools, how to hold parts, about pressure. You put it all together to actually make titanium rocket parts in record time and do it right here in America. And the machines, the automation, and the technology allow you to do it here. Who cares if you make $2 an hour, right? It's about making those machines run on their own and run lights out.
Okay, well, let's talk about that for a second. If I buy my parts over in China, everybody knows that you can buy things in China so much more affordably. But if you make them in America with the machines, doing it intelligently, we can actually drive the cost down so that we can compete very well with China.
Absolutely. I think not a lot of people understand that China has the same exact machines that we have, right? And people will look at cheap labor, and because they don't understand the manufacturing industry and the technology, they just see $2 compared to $30 an hour. But the trick is to use automation, advanced skills when it comes to fixturing and tooling your parts, so you can actually run 100 parts at a time and allow the machine to run on its own, therefore allowing you to be competitive. Because if the machine's running it, then you don't need as many employees. You have more shops opening up doing all the work. Each one has less employees, and they're high-paid, high-skilled guys.
Wow. And now, can anybody run these machines?
That's like asking me.
Could a student like Mark Haney figure out a way to run these machines? Old man? I mean, do I have to know how to work a computer?
Well, let me tell you a little bit about what we do. So if you took a strand of your hair, divided it by 30, right, that's 10,000ths of an inch. Those are the tolerances that we're keeping in the titanium. So when you're gutting the titanium, when you're milling and hogging it all out, you have to allow it to relax and be absolutely perfect, right? And we're dealing with parts that cost $10,000, sometimes $50,000, $100,000 for one part. And if you ship that to the aerospace company and you're a hair off or less than a hair, it's coming back and all that money is gone. Yeah. So it's definitely an art. There's a lot of pressure online. And I really would say, you know, not everybody's built to be a banker, a doctor, or a lawyer, right? But there's a lot of people that aren't built to actually run these machines and stuff. So if you have the head for it, you actually can make a good living, put your kids through college, buy a house, and make it happen. American.
And because of your success, you have decided to help others to learn this trade, this highly technical trade that people used to do by doing manual labor or more of a, like, rolling up their sleeves and getting dirty. But now it's more computerized, and so it's an intelligence that drives these machines. But you're helping others to learn this skill.
Absolutely. You know, looking at all the jobs lost and just understanding the ignorance towards our industry, it just made me sick, you know, knowing that our whole trade's been sold out, right? This industry built this country. And the men who roll up their sleeves, men and women who roll up their sleeves and actually put in the work, got into the grind and actually manufactured parts, you know, those are the guys that actually built this country right here. So
we're talking like for General Motors and
yeah,
Ford
exactly.
And Lockheed. And
exactly. And, you know, small shops, there's thousands. Every single city has hundreds and thousands of small shops with 2 to 10 employees, right? They're everywhere. And those guys make parts for everything that you touch, stand, understand, on, play with.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Everything's been manufactured somehow. So it's a huge industry. And I just got sick of seeing it, you know, seeing everything go to China and stuff. And I want to make a difference.
So you've created a television program that that inspires people to learn this trade, to learn this art.
Absolutely.
That's a national show.
It's a national show. It's actually worldwide. So one of the cool things is everybody's like, you know, there's no kids getting into the trade. And one thing I'd ask is, like, who's the heroes of the trade? Think about it. You got to look back at Henry Ford. You know, manufacturing is a $2 trillion industry, and yet there's no heroes like basketball and football and NASCAR, right? So the TV show is one of its kind. It's trailblazing, and it's basically showing an industry that nobody knows about. But all of a sudden, the parents are seeing that it's not dirty floors. It's not oil on the floors and just, you know, this dirty, grimy place. We're building rockets. We're building submarines. We're building electric cars. We're building the future. And kids can make six figures easy and actually have a great life.
Wow. I'm going to have to take a break at this time, Titan. You know, talking about the heroes of manufacturing, so inspiring, so much talk about all other kinds of businesses out there getting into manufacturing here in California and creating jobs, my favorite subject. When we come back, we'll talk more about Titan Gilroy and how he ended up coming from a place that a lot of us would call maybe even at zero, and how he built this company from nothing. When we come back, this is the Haney Biz Project.
And now back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with the Entrepreneurs Advocate, Mark Haney.
All right, welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited, presented by Silvers HR. I'm Mark Haney, and I am rejoined by Titan Gilroy, the man behind Titan America. Now, Titan, you know, this is radio, so people can't see you, but you are the type of guy that, you know, probably if I was going out somewhere, I would want to be hanging around you so I didn't get beat up, right? So, you know, if I go somewhere, I'm just assuming people don't try to pick fights with you, do they? I mean, he's a pretty big guy.
Not anymore.
It doesn't happen anymore. I mean, when I go out to somewhere, and I don't really have anybody pick on me either, but it's for a different reason, because people would feel guilty about beating up the old man. I mean, I have, like, people in wheelchairs stand, hey, don't touch that guy, right? They'll stand up for me, make sure I don't get beat up. But
you're the CrossFit king. What are you talking about?
I am a CrossFit guy. But anyway, so you came from a place where a lot of us can't imagine. I mean, we can all imagine Hawaii, right? You grew up in Hawaii, but you were actually homeless in Hawaii at one point, right? Tell us about what happened when you first started out as a young man and found yourself homeless in Hawaii, and then what you did to kind of battle your way through to where you are today.
Well, I think a lot of guys who've accomplished things have gone through the valleys, right? So I actually was born in California.
Okay.
And my abusive father used to just beat my mom, and she tried to escape a couple times, couldn't, and literally talked to some friends, and they got her over to Hawaii, and she thought it would be a great place to raise her kids. And everything fell through, basically, and we ended up on the beach homeless. And I just grew up being the only white kid in my neighborhood, and just getting picked on and beaten on. And I ended up being a top fighter for the United States. And I got a contract coming out of high school and got picked up by Top Rank and won a whole bunch of championships. And when everything was going good for me, there was one problem. Nobody taught me how to be a man. I didn't have brothers. I didn't have a dad. I didn't have male figures. And fighting was all I knew. And I went to a nightclub. I threw one punch. The man hit his head on the concrete and basically got 16 years in prison.
Whoa, man.
16 years in prison, yeah. I only served three. I got out, and basically I couldn't get that street thing out of me. And one day I walked out, looked in the paper, saw a job for an operator for machining. I was from Hawaii. I knew pineapples. I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
This was now in Sunnyvale, California. And I got a job. I walked into a machine shop for $9 an hour. It changed my life forever.
Wow. So you went into the job thinking what?
Thinking I need to pay child support. I'm making $9 an hour. That's not enough. And I'm, you know, I had gotten married and I was living off, you know, her parents. Like, we were living at her place, you know, where she grew up and stuff. And I was just like, it was just like a hardship, you know. And I saw the machines. They put me in front of these machines and I saw the programs. And instantly I was pushing a button. Right. And I knew that that was a $9 to $12 an hour job. But the guy who was actually programming the machines, I heard that that guy makes actually like $25, $30 an hour. And I'm like, how do you do that?
Yes.
Right. How do you do that? And I started like just taking home the books. And asking a lot of questions, and they put me in front of the machines. And my head, you know, I wasn't good in school and or good at hardly anything except fighting and art.
Oh, okay.
But that creativity, you know, came across, and in the machines, I just started having fun. I started like taking the times. If we're running 1,000 different products for a medical company and they were taking 10 minutes, I would speed up the process. I'd make little changes on my own, and then I'd drop it to 5 minutes, and that's 5,000 minutes divided by 60. So every time the owner would walk past, I'd be like, hey, Dave, I just saved this amount of money. And then sooner or later, he just started loving me, you know.
Yeah.
And in 2 years, I was making $28 an hour, had my own place, had a car, and American Manufacturing, like, literally saved my life.
Amazing. Go in, $9 an hour, out of prison, at what a lot of people would call the bottom. And you said, you know what? I'm going to turn this thing around. You worked your way up the top.
That's it. You know, it just really clicks. You know, something happened later in life. And that is that I met my grandmother for the first time. My grandfather, she gave me pictures of him, and he actually painted, so I do oil paintings, but my grandfather actually painted the art, the nose art on the bombers in the 40s.
Wow.
On the planes. And he was a CNC machinist, or he was a machinist, a manual machinist, and he was a foreman at Boeing.
Wow.
I met my dad, and his dad was actually a machinist for Chrysler in Detroit. So I came from pineapples. I came from pineapples, walked into a manufacturing company, actually excelled and just got it, and realized that both my grandfathers actually were great men and they did great things in the machining industry. And it just showed me that, you know, sometimes your circumstances that you come up in, you're blinded by what you're seeing and you don't see the real world, right? So all of a sudden the world started opening up and I started seeing that I was part of something greater, that I was a part of America and manufacturing, and my whole attitude towards life just started to change.
You know, 9 out of 10 small businesses fail in the first 5 years. And I believe that it's because people quit, right? You didn't quit. I mean, what would you say to some small business guy that's saying, you know what, things are getting pretty tough. I'm thinking about throwing in the towel.
I think that if you look at anybody who's successful, they've gone through the failures. They've gone through the trials and stuff. And some people, sometimes, you know, the way is so dark and you don't know how to do it. You just have to have the courage to keep stepping forward, right? But I think if you're a man or woman of integrity, that you do the right thing, you work hard, and you just need to continue and make it happen. And all of a sudden, you look back and you're like, I just made it through.
Yeah.
I just made it through.
Yeah.
But business is hard. But that's what makes it exciting. I love business, and I love like going after it and trailblazing and doing what everybody says can't be done.
So you love business. You have a passion for winning. What's your big why, though? Why do you do what you do? You help so many people unselfishly as you built this business. Obviously, you're building a great business, but you spend so much time helping others. What drives that?
Well, you know, going through such hardships, going through prison, you know, letting so many people down, you know, coming out of prison, you know, finding my faith. I'm a Christian man and I love the Lord, and he gave me a chance to actually do amazing things and stuff. So I don't ever want to let him down. And in that, in walking, you know, I built a great company. I hired, you know, 55 employees. I made millions of dollars and stuff. And in 08, just like everybody else, it fell apart. Everything crumbled. Over the course of 2009, I laid off 40 employees. You know, you can put me in lockdown in prison, which I had been in. It cannot compare you with sitting in front of your employees and telling them that they can't put food on their tables because you can't hire them. You can't keep them working. You can't give them a paycheck, right? So going through 2009, almost losing everything, you know, I came out, you know, awesome things happened. I jumped into aerospace. I started working for SpaceX and different companies. You know, I kept a small crew and we started rebuilding the company. But at that point, I saw that 50,000 companies had gone out of business. I saw that our leaders had sold us out, the American worker. And I just decided I wanted to make a change. I wanted to do something different. And then I set out to create the TV show, pull back the curtains and make it happen and inspire a whole nother generation of manufacturers to come up, take the bull by the horns and actually make products in America at a cheaper price so they can take care of their families
for years
to come.
And people can learn how to operate these highly technical machines by turning on your TV show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's nothing more gratifying. Every single day I get letters, I get emails from company owners where they were like, I was closing my doors. I was laying employees off. I saw a process. I saw a company. I saw a way to forward by watching your show. And now I'm buying machines and hiring people because we basically have changed the entire game at our company and stuff. And that's what I see is there's so many manufacturers out there that are fighting over scraps. They're head down trying to make it happen. And they're not seeing the latest technology. They're not seeing who's teaching them, right? They're the leaders in their shops. But sometimes you just need to see something to get it, right? And that's what our show does. I took a whole school bus of kids down to Mercury Marine, and I showed them what 3 million square feet of manufacturing was. We showed them the robotics and the cells, and we showed them how we were making parts and engines right here in America. I took them to Edelbrock, took a tour through Edelbrock, and showed how you go from a foundry and castings to a finished part. And people started learning, like, hey, this is kind of like how it's made on steroids. And then I have education pieces where I actually machine, and I'll show people, like, look, you have titanium parts out there, and they're running at, we say, 20 inches per minute. So it's inches per minute instead of miles per hour, like a car. And then I'll show them, okay, these are the tools of yesterday. This is the tool I'm using today. It wasn't invented until since it's been like a year old, right? So you've never seen it before. Now I'm going to run this same titanium at 250 inches per minute. And it blows people's minds, right?
Yeah.
But if you're doing titanium implants and you're doing them in China and you're doing them, you're saving 10-15%, and all of a sudden you see somebody run titanium at 20 times faster, right? That's the difference of succeeding in business and not succeeding.
What kind of kids are really drawn to that? So there's certain kids that as they go through these, you go through a tour of a factory like this, that maybe are, goofing around. I don't know. I might have been one of those kids that was sort of goofing around because I'm not maybe as technical. What kind of kid or what kind of young person is drawn to this sort of endeavor?
Yeah, well, I said earlier, not everybody's built to be a banker, doctor, or lawyer, right? So people will down the millennials. But actually, when it comes to CNC machining, it comes to technology and engineering and the CAD-CAM systems and making the future, these kids have grown up on computers.
Yeah.
These kids are sharp. And when you try to put them on a manual mill and have them sand and grind for years before they ever touch a computerized machine, you're going to lose them. So what I've done is I've developed an academy that's free education to teach these guys the skills, and it takes them to the top in programming. So once they start actually making solid models and programming a part, they can design a rim for their car, actually program it, and go out there and machine it. They fall in love because all of a sudden they're actually holding something tangible that they made, and they get it, and they excel in it. And in a couple years, they can do in a couple years what, older generations took 20 years to do,
What are you doing in San Quentin these days? So you've gone back to the prison. What are you doing now in San Quentin? What's it like to walk through the doors of San Quentin?
I finished the second season of my show, and I was like, it's amazing, right? So we just did 20-something episodes where we're showing manufacturing, and I'm like, there's got to be something bigger. There's got to be something like I want to truly make a difference. And all of a sudden, the door opened, and Michael Valdez, a vice principal for all 35 prisons in California, walked through, and he was a fan of the show, and he realized I was in prison because I talked about it on the show. And he told me, Titan, we actually have CNC shops in the prisons in California. And he's like, but they're not running efficiently. And he told me about San Quentin, and for 2 years it's been in chains. And he asked me for my help. And I basically walked down there. I looked at 70 machines sitting and dust all over and chains, locking the whole place up. And I told him, you got to get rid of these. You got to do this. You got to do this. And you basically have to gut the entire thing and start over if you want these guys to actually get skills that are viable where they can actually get a job and support their families. Yeah. And he asked me if I would help. Right? He asked me if I'd help, and I'm like,
I've been trying to stay out of this place.
Exactly. I'm not all about going back to prison, but, I started looking at it. I'm like, maybe the show, with my faith and stuff, I'm like, maybe the show brought me to a point to put me back in prison because I'm qualified, right? Because those inmates will listen to me because they know where I've been and they know where I am now, right? So I made a decision. I said, can I bring the cameras in? And they said, no. They said, no way. Scared Straight was a mistake and all this stuff. And I'm like, you know, and they said, will you do it anyway? And I said, yes. I said, I'll do it because I'm like, this is a chance to make a true difference, right? But I couldn't get past the fact, like, the cameras, there's something, like, that's my destiny. Like, why would they not? And 2 weeks later, Bill Sessa, right under the governor who makes all decisions for all 35 prisons, happened to read the Comstock Business Magazine, a business article about myself. He got inspired because he's like, oh, this guy was in prison and now he's doing great things in manufacturing. I need to get him in, like, San Quentin or one of the prisons. And then he realized, wait, I'm the same guy that he denied. So he called me up, gave me full access to all 35 prisons. And over the last 2 years, we just built the most elite CNC Academy. It's Titans of CNC Academy in San Quentin Prison. We did it on TV. So every teacher, every student across America can watch it. And we made a template so it can be duplicated, not only in prisons, but in colleges, so everybody can step up their game. Boom.
You said that when you walked through San Quentin, you felt safe.
You know, so it's a funny story. So my insurance actually canceled me. They're like, you're going into prison, and they canceled
me. Man.
And I'm like, you don't understand. I'm the safest guy in that prison because I'm bringing hope. When I walk through that yard, they come from far to shake my hand because I'm bringing hope to those guys because they understand that I hold the key, the wisdom, and the skills to actually help them be successful on the outside, right? They've failed. They've made mistakes. There's some people that are never getting out, right? But they have families, and there's a lot that are getting out. And they know that they don't want to be dependent on those families. They want to make their own way. And yet, after 20 years in prison, how would they ever do it? CNC machining, manufacturing, going into a warehouse running CNC machines, and it'll give you a good life, good money and all of that. And it's crazy, right?
Talk about purpose. Talk about a big why, helping these guys with no hope in many cases. And when you go through there, they see that hope. They see that high-paying job or that reason to keep on going. Titan, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. Very inspiring. I think we might be bringing you back for a couple more minutes. We're going to cut to break. And again, Titan Gilroy of Titan America. This is the Haney Biz Project, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with Haney Biz's Mark Haney.
All right, welcome back to the Haney Biz Project presented by Silvers HR. I'm Mark Haney. And we've got Titan Gilroy here, and we have a guest in the house with me and my man Titan. It's Mr. Senator Ted Gaines. How you doing, Senator?
Very good. How are you, Mark?
Good. Now, do we have your microphone on? We got to get you up to that mic a little bit to make sure. Yeah, you got to speak right into these mics.
Awesome.
Now, Titan and I have been talking about building businesses. We've been talking about perseverance, and I got to apologize, Titan, because I've got the name of your company wrong. You've actually changed the name of your business.
Absolutely. So when I went into San Quentin and we built the academy, we actually built a curriculum, and I named it Titans of CNC. So it's not Titan, me. It's anybody who excels can be a Titan of CNC. And then I just stuck, and I loved it, and so I made my company name Titans of CNC also.
Titans of CNC, and now we have a Titan of Sacramento. How long you're like five generations, Ted? I mean, in Sacramento.
That's right. Yes. So goes back to my great great grandfather coming over from Germany, and the gold rush was going on in the early 1850s, and he had to find work, and he got a wagon and a team of horses, and he hauled material up to the miners, brought gold back.
Okay, and so he was he an entrepreneur? It sounds like he had his own business. And
yes,
you guys have entrepreneurship running through the family, too. I mean, the family tree has continued with entrepreneurship, right?
Yes. So I'm very, very excited to be a small business owner. I've went into business with my dad into the insurance business. I've got my daughter working in the business, so it's the third generation, so that's really cool.
Yeah.
I've got children that are entrepreneurial. They're working in businesses. And I'm very grateful for that.
So from being trusted to go up and down as in the olden days in the wagon, right, with the gold, now you're trusted with people's insurance. What's it like being owning a an insurance business? Because you're also juggling a part-time gig, too, in, at the Capitol.
Yeah, that's right. The politics really consumes a lot of my time. But I'm very fortunate that I've got a daughter who is helping run the agency on a daily basis. I focused more on how do we grow. And I've told my daughter, if we can't grow the business, it won't be around by the time I retire. So we have been working on some acquisitions. We've done three acquisitions in the last 2 years.
Wow.
We're looking for more opportunities in the area to keep it vibrant and growing, and then also be able to adjust to the marketplace as it changes. There's a lot of new technology with autonomous cars, for instance.
Yes.
Which their estimates are that premiums for auto insurance are going to drop. So that's great for the consumer, but we have to figure out how do we operate with a lower margin. What other products, perhaps, should we be offering our clients to make sure we're satisfying their needs?
What other big changes are happening within the insurance industry these days? Obviously, a lot of people talk about Obamacare. They talk about how the affordable health care may change. What are you seeing in terms of changes happening within healthcare?
Well, I'm hoping that we'll see an easing in the marketplace for businesses, because it's been a real struggle for the implementation of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and when you're mandating that employers provide coverage and that you have to provide it with certain benefits, number one, maybe all the employees don't need those benefits. Okay, so if you have young employees, they're not going to need the full complement of coverage that, say, someone my age would need. And so you ought to have more variability in the rates based on the amount of coverage that they need. We ought to have more competition in the marketplace where insurance can be bought across state lines. Wouldn't it be nice to have 20 choices instead of three or four here in California?
Do small business owners, I mean, Titan's got a medium-sized business. I've got a number of businesses, small and medium. How should we be thinking about risk, right? I mean, how do you know how much insurance to buy, how much risk you ought to take? I mean, is there a general rule of thumb on just how you cover your business?
Well, what we try to do is make sure we know what the assets are of the client that we're insuring. So we want to take a look, what is the business valuation? What are your personal assets? And in the event that you got into a tough lawsuit, we want to make sure that those assets are protected. So we take a look at that valuation. On the personal line side, we come across so many people that are buying minimum limits of coverage that have huge assets, and it's a huge mistake. If you have a 15-30-5 policy, so that's 15 per person, 30 per accident on the bodily injury side, 5,000 on property damage. So if you ran into a nice Chevy pickup and let's say you totaled it, you're looking at a $50,000 loss. You only have $5,000 of coverage.
Yeah.
You own a nice home. Maybe you have a small business. You're liable. I mean, you could see where someone would come after you and come after your assets to make sure that they were reimbursed.
Feel free to jump in here, Titan. We're talking about risk and talking about building businesses, and you spoke about perseverance in a very detailed way before Ted came on. I'm wondering what Ted, you have a great family, and you have a great family as well, Titan. I mean, how do you? You've just got this perfect world. What's something down for Ted Gaines? What stresses you out?
Oh, gosh.
Because you got a lot of good stuff going on with you.
Well, I think you got to make sure you're not too busy, right? So we get so passionate about what we're doing, got to make sure we have time for family.
How about you, Titan? What stresses you out these days?
I think that I don't get that stressed out, right?
Okay.
Because I think it has a lot to do with maturity in business also, right? The more valleys that you go through, and you come out of it, you gain that experience. So since I've gone through a million different valleys,
yeah, you've been through
I'm able to be cool under pressure. And somebody told me back in 2008 when I almost lost everything and I was like frantic, right? They said, Titan, they can take everything from you, but they can't take your talent. And that that really told me something about myself, that I solve problems and I make money for big people. So no matter how bad it gets, we're going to be okay. Yeah. So I carry that confidence.
So let's talk about family for a second here, Ted, because I know your daughter, Caroline, very well. So I feel like I know you because I know you through her eyes. Talk to us about how you have built such an incredible family. You and Beth together.
I attribute it to God. I'm a Christian, and we are so blessed. We are so fortunate, and so we've tried to live godly lives, and we go to Bayside Church, awesome church, so dynamic and innovative and creative, a great church for entrepreneurs, I think, and so we've tried to live by those tenets, and we've just been blessed, and I can tell you many circumstances where God has really provided for us through tough times. We didn't necessarily have an easy road raising our kids.
Six kids. It must have been a challenge or two. What's the biggest challenge you run into raising six children, five girls?
Gosh, I would say that, just trying to make sure that they are not overtaken by the world. Right. Okay. Because there's a lot of nasty things out in the world. So we want to make sure they stay away from drugs, stay away from alcohol, that they keep their focus on their faith. And then how are they going to live that in their lives? And I've got a great wife. She's the backbone of the family. Awesome in terms of pouring her life into our children. And so I would say God and then my wife. And then I try to be a good, I try to do what I can to be a good father. So I'm trying to do what I can on my part. But my wife has really poured in to our children. She came from a very, very tough, abusive family environment, especially with her mom. And her mom had some mental health problems, and it got taken out on her. Yeah. And so she vowed, actually, to God that if I have the opportunity to be a mother and raise children, I'm going to try to be the best mother I can be. And she has been.
Well, you guys have both done a great job. And I want to cut the break here, but I want to thank you, Titan, for coming on, Ted, for coming on. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about family. And we're going to talk a little bit about what it's like to build a business, or raise a business right here in Sacramento, right here in California. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with Haney Biz investorpreneur Mark Haney.
All right, welcome back. We are here with Titan Gilroy and Ted Gaines, and we've been talking about family. We've been talking about perseverance. Sometimes those two run hand in hand. But let's talk about perseverance right here in California, right? Because building a business here, unless you're in the Silicon Valley doing high-tech stuff, we're not really known as the place to build manufacturing businesses or maybe any kind of business. Ted, help us out with this.
Oh my gosh, I think Titan has the answers because he's getting it done, and he's doing it in a big, big way. And I think the challenge is, how do we move people from, let's say, the lower class to the middle class?
Yeah, right?
And how do we find those good paying jobs?
And how do we do that? I mean, so we have companies that are thinking about fleeing California for states that maybe have a different tax structure and so on. But there's really nothing we can do about that tax structure. I mean, you work at the place where you guys decide what the taxes ought to be, right? I mean, is there anything we can do?
Well, I think it's very, very difficult because the majority party has a certain mindset in what they think taxes should be. And what I've learned in being there for a decade is they can never tax you enough. And that's just not the way I feel.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm completely counter to that. So I think there are some areas where we can work. There was a gas tax that was recently passed. And so I'm trying to figure out ways that we can basically repeal it.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's very regressive, right? So it's going to hurt the middle and especially the lower class here in California when you see gasoline go up 12 cents a gallon. And then your vehicle license fee will go anywhere from, say, $75 to $175 increase per year. So that's a real burden for someone that's on a very tight budget. I think we could look at an initiative process and see what we could do on that front. I've been talking to other legislators about that to see if we can gather the signatures, get it on the ballot, and let the people make the decision based on a two-thirds vote as to whether they want their gas taxes increased or not.
But as a fifth-generation Sacramentan or Californian, I mean, sometimes as a small business guy, don't we just sort of have to face the brutal facts as we know them and in the end believe that, hey, you know what, it's going to be okay. Let me focus on what I can control. And I try to – I'm not – I mean, I have my philosophies on maybe the way taxes and regulations ought to be. But you know what? It never seems to do me any good when I spend my time thinking about that stuff. I've got work to do right here in my own business.
Absolutely. No, you're right. And so I keep thinking of Titan and the way he operates. I mean, he's got high-paying jobs. And so if manufacturing is going to work in California, given all the challenges, whether it's workers' comp, regulations, taxes, you got to make sure that you're creating high-value jobs. And so I think he's provided a perfect model for that job creation in California.
How important is California to you, Titan? Obviously, this is your home. Your hometown is right here in Sacramento now. But you're building manufacturing in California. I mean, did people ever say that's crazy?
I tell everybody, if we can do it in California, we can do it anywhere.
Yeah.
But the more that I travel around America, I'm all over the place. The more I take pride in where I live. I live in Roseville, California.
Nice.
It's so beautiful. It's right below the foothills, right above San Francisco, and I just absolutely love it. So, you know, I work hard. I think a lot of people have to understand that. I think it's on a bigger movement to bring the jobs back, right?
Okay.
So we need to bring the jobs back. We need to look at, you know, our president. We need to look at our leaders. We need to make rules and regulations that allow for manufacturing to happen. And then we need to use technology to actually solve the problems so we can hire people. And if you're making money and you're making parts in America, you'll be able to pay taxes.
Yeah.
And you just, it's your choice if you want to be here in California or not.
Yeah, entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs is something that I try to live by. You know, we have guys like you and Ted coming on the show and sharing your thoughts. And I think just helping that next guy in line, right? If we can, if some of the guys that are having made it through some of the tough times can help the next guys up through their struggles, you know, maybe that's how we get through this thing. What do you think, Ted?
Absolutely. I appreciate what you're doing with Haney Biz. So you've got an incubator. Right. And
yeah,
you're helping entrepreneurs get started. You're providing all the services that they would need for growth. And then you're also saying, hey, if you're a business that is successful, but you want to get, you have a bigger vision, let me see if I can figure out a way to work alongside you and help you get to that level.
Yeah. Sometimes people have that, I'll never make it. You know, they kind of get gloomy. You kind of get down in the dumps, and you almost think, maybe I can't do it. We can blame California. We can blame regulation, but that doesn't do any good. We have to figure it out ourselves. And I don't think we have to quit, right?
No, absolutely.
We don't have to quit on Sacramento and California.
No. I just, as an elected official, I fight to try to make it better, right? But we also have to face the reality of now and what it is as business owners. And so how do we make that business grow given the constraints that are before us? I kind of consider myself like a mouse among elephants. Okay, we've got to be dynamic. We've got to be able to move fast so we don't get smashed by the elephant.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, that's the beauty of entrepreneurship. We are smaller. We have to think smarter. We have to be a little bit agile, and we can figure out a way to make it through. I want to thank you both for coming on the show today, Ted Gaines and Titan Gilroy, sharing your thoughts on perseverance, on family, on why Sacramento is a great place to live. And I want to thank my sponsors for making this possible. I mean, the Haney Biz Project is not possible without the sponsors of this show. We're talking about Five Star Bank. We're talking about the Entrepreneurs Organization. We're talking about Audi of Rockland right around the corner from us guys. You know what? I also want to thank my team for standing by me. We got people that are helping make this entrepreneurial journey a possibility. And you know, this week is about gratitude. I'm going to share my closing thoughts in a minute about gratitude and about, why we shouldn't give up on this great place we call Sacramento. This is the Haney Biz Project.
Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited with Mark Haney.
Welcome back to Entrepreneurs Unlimited. We've been talking about perseverance, been talking about family, been talking about our town of Sacramento. And you know what? Never giving up. And sometimes we need somebody in our life to, as a sounding board, as I call it, a workplace soulmate to kind of help, you know, help us, give us that strength when things are going tough. Because as entrepreneurs, we all know that at times it is not easy. I think Titan shared that with us very well, you know, in 2008, all the way down to nothing, and how tough it was letting some of his key people go. But he battled back, and he's built this incredible company. And you know what? As I think about a story like Titan and what's going on with Ted Gaines, it just makes me think about my own life and where I learned a little bit about perseverance. And I just remember it coming from my mom and dad, right? And my mom, I still remember the story of my brother, Paul. My little brother is in Little League. He was on the Dodgers, and he wanted to quit the team. I think it's because he was on the Dodgers. He wanted to be on the Giants, so he wanted to quit. And I remember my mom, you know, walking him out to the car after the game, and he says, "Mom, you know, I'm thinking about quitting." And he says, "My mom, I just remember her saying, 'I've told you, and I've told you, and I've told you, and I'm done telling you, Haney's don't quit.'" And he's like, "Does that mean you're done?" You know, he's like, she's like, "I'm not going to tell you anymore." And he's like, "Does that mean you're done spitting on me too?" Because she was, you know, my mom was a tyrant when it came to the idea of quitting. Quitting, if you are a Haney, you do not quit. And I think, you know, she was that sounding board for me. My brother was that sounding board for me. Now I have a team of partners that are those sounding boards to me. And they give me that strength to go on in our businesses. And I hope I can do that. I hope that I can do that for them a little bit too. And as we go out, you know, in our fight to build businesses here in Sacramento, as we battle the regulation, as we battle the competition, as we battle to keep these businesses afloat, right? So many small businesses, they don't make it. But we need to find that workplace soulmate, that entrepreneur next door, that person that we can bounce those ideas off of. Entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs. That's what this show is all about. That's what building businesses in Sacramento can be about. So never give up on your dream. Know that you are not alone. Because I'm right down the street in Rockland, and I am the entrepreneur next door, and I am never above you, never below you, always by your side.